Welcome to Native America Calling. From Studio 49 in Albuquerque, I'm Tara Gatewood. November 27th is the final deadline to apply for Cobell settlement money. After that, the money will be dispersed to the Cobell Education Fund. Thousands of people are on the list of those eligible for a payment, but have yet to collect the funds. Today, we'll talk with people from the Bureau of Indian Affairs about the settlement and the looming deadline. They'll be ready to answer your questions, too. We're back after the news. Stay with us.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The 10th Circuit Court had ruled that the city of Riverton in central Wyoming is not inside the Wind River Reservation boundary, prompting the Eastern Shoshone and Northern Arapaho tribes to ask for another hearing. The court recently rejected that request, as Wyoming Public Radio's Melody Edwards reports.
Wind River Native Advocacy Center Board Chair Sergio Maldonado says the next step for the dispute is the U.S. Supreme Court.
I'm hopeful that the Supreme Court is going to be equitable in their interpretation, but more importantly, their ruling, the ruling that would acknowledge the sovereign status of the tribes, that the tribes have a right to monitor the air and water.
Wyoming Attorney General Peter Michael represented the state in the case and says the tribes have little chance of seeing the Riverton case make it to the U.S. Supreme Court. He says the tribes made strong arguments to the appeals court, but they didn't successfully show that a 1905 treaty ever intended to return the city of Riverton to tribal jurisdiction.
They've heard many of these cases. Is there anything special about this case that would add to the body of law? And a lot of times, if that's not true, the U.S. Supreme Court will say, well, this case is pretty much fact-based and unique to the state of Wyoming and what happened in the 1905 treaty. And the 10th Circuit, it didn't feel that it needed to rehear it.
The tribes contend that the enforcement of tribal sovereignty is a special question that needs to be debated. But Michael says the state has never objected to the tribes monitoring their own air and water quality, just whether they should have jurisdiction over the city's legal system. The boundary dispute arose 3 years ago when the Environmental Protection Agency conducted an air quality study that raised questions of whether the sale of reservation lands to non-natives shrank the size of the reservation or not. But the Advocacy Center Chair Maldonado says the heart of the debate is a question of states getting tangled up in a treaty relationship between the tribes and the federal government. He says it's not about the tribes taking over the city.
Never was there any discussion about jurisdictional issues, law issues, taxation issues. The tribes were about monitoring clean air and water.
For National Native News, I'm Melody Edwards in Laramie.
A community development project on the Pine Ridge Reservation is one of seven organizations to win a Bush Prize for Community Innovation. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt has more.
The Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation is recognized for what's being called a creative, fierce, and dogged effort to aid people on Pine Ridge. Thunder Valley's Deputy Director, Jennifer Irving, says one major effort of the group is to preserve the Lakota language between generations.
We are mainly concerned about building fluent speakers and starting with our youngest population, which is our kids. And so we started a few years back with the Lakota Child Care Immersion Program, and now we are expanding that into a local elementary school.
The award includes a $500,000 grant to the organization. Irving says Thunder Valley has big plans for the financial windfall.
We just broke ground last week on a community center here on the Thunder Valley Community Development Corporation's land base. We have about 34 acres here that we're building a sustainable community. And that community center will serve kind of as the heartbeat of this area.
The Bush Prize is awarded annually in South and North Dakota, Minnesota, and 23 Native American nations in the region. Two North Dakota organizations are winners as well, along with four groups in Minnesota. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
And I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the Association of American Indian Physicians, promoting heart health. Information on helping prevent 1 million heart attacks and strokes at aaip.org/million-hearts. Support by AARP. At AARP, we create and connect you to unique tools and programs to help you save money and tackle the issues that matter most to you, your family, and your community. What we do might surprise you. More at aarp.org.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood. Are you a member of the White Earth Band of Ojibwe? You may be one of more than 1,800 White Earth members on a list that still have money coming to them from the Cobell legal settlement. Almost 140 members of the Confederated Tribes of the Warm Springs Reservation of Oregon are also on the list, and as are more than 40 members of the Southern Ute Tribe. There's an estimated 35,000 names on what's called the Whereabouts Unknown List, who may be eligible for settlement money. The deadline to apply for this money is less than 2 weeks away. The Cobell settlement is one of the largest class action lawsuits against the federal government. Settled in 2010, the $3.4 billion suit resolved the issue of the federal government's failure to manage Indian trust assets. The suit was originally filed by the Blackfeet tribal member Eloise Cobell, who walked on in 2011. $1.5 billion of the money was set aside for individual payments. In the next hour, we'll hear more about this, and you are also welcome to call in too if there's something you'd like to say about funds that have yet to be dispersed or simply have questions. We encourage you to give us a call. Phone lines are open. The number is 1-800-996-2848. And right now we're going to go to Washington, D.C. to say hello to John Tasuda. He is the Acting Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs. He is Kiowa, and it is our pleasure to welcome him to the hour. John, thank you for being with us.
Thank you, Tara. First, let me say thank you to Native American Calling for hosting us so we can raise awareness about this monumental milestone in the Cobell settlement. Digital media and your platform have been a crucial tool over the years in getting word out to Indian country about important dates set by the settlement, and it has aided our effort to find the missing 14,000 account holders before the upcoming deadline set by the court, which is November 27, 2017.
Hey, John, hang tight. We are just having a really hard time hearing you. And let's see if we can get this phone line a little more clear as we hear this information. And folks, you are also welcome to join us at 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And maybe you have questions. We're going to hear more details on this. But again, if you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. I'm not sure who I have on the line, so I'm going to turn to my control room who I can go to. But give us a call, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. I'm going to try and see if Jerry is on the line. Do we have Jerry? Okay, let's see if we can try that again. John, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay.
Is that better?
No, we're just really getting a lot of distortion there. Hang tight. We're going to try and remedy this. And folks, again, you can join us. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And I do want to direct your attention. There are a couple of websites that you can go to. Type in and see just some of these names. I got a lot of questions myself. I can't wait to ask some of them to our guest today. But again, you can join us at 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And it looks like we're going to keep trying to get these folks on the line while my engineer queues up a moment while we reset. Hang tight.
Let's go ahead and hear a little bit from our Native Nations. Here's the voices of Native America. Looks like we got the gentleman back. You are tuned in to Native America Calling. Today we are taking a look at the Cobell Settlement. The deadline of November 27th is getting near, and we are going to talk a little bit about unclaimed funds, whereabouts unknown list. Let's go ahead and bring him back from Washington, D.C. We have John Tasuda on the line. John, are you there?
This is John.
Hey, John. Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, much better. John, I know your time is limited and you got to leave us at 11:20 here, but I just want to get to the heart of all of this. And where are we currently with the funds? Why do they exist? Why are there so many names? Go ahead and start us off there.
Sure. Well, let me start off with just a bit of background here. So the reason there's so many names is the Cobell lawsuit that you referenced in your introduction was a class action lawsuit on behalf of approximately 300,000 to 500,000 individual Indian class members against the Department of Interior and the Department of Treasury. So that's a pretty large number to begin with. the claims were for incorrectly accounting for income derived from individual Indian trust assets, which are legally owned by the United States but held in trust for the individual Indians. They're the beneficial owners. So when the settlement was approved by Congress in 2010, it was set into several pots of money. There's the $3.4 billion total settlement, which includes $2 billion in the Trust Land Consolidation Fund and $1.4 billion in direct payments to the class members. And again, that was an approximate 300 to 500,000 individuals, because while the lawsuit was going on, they didn't put in it was a monumental task to figure out exactly how many people were in that class. And so the lawsuit was resolved, and then the work went into finding the individuals who would get payments out of the settlement. So there's two classes of individuals that were eligible to receive the $1.4 billion in direct payments out of the settlement fund. The first class was called the historical accounting claims, and that was comprised of individual Indians who were alive on September 30th, 2009, had an individual Indian money account anytime between October 25th, 1994 and September 30th, 2009, and had made at least one cash transaction in that account. The other, class of individuals was the trust administration claims, which was comprised of individual Indians who were alive on September 30th, 2009, had an individual Indian money account anytime between 1998 and September 30th, 2009, recorded in the currently available electronic data in federal government systems. And also included in that group were individual Indians who, as of September 30th, 2009, had a recorded or demonstrable interest in land held in trust or restricted status by the United States for them as an individual Indian. So that's, two large groups of people with some, with some parameters around it, but there's a large group of people within those parameters. So it was a monumental task trying to identify those folks. The end result at this point, obviously, the vast amount of monies have gone out and been paid out to individuals, but we have about 14,000 eligible individual Indian money account holders that are currently classified as the whereabouts unknown. And that's who, who we're looking to identify and who are in danger of, if they're alive, if they fit within the parameters, and some of these are open questions until we find the individuals to be able to answer, that they would be eligible, but that eligibility will end on November 27th of this year.
And John, you just threw out a figure, 14,000. I've been told 35 from my staff here. Is there any reason why those numbers are different?
Yes, but you know what? That gets into some technical definitions of the individuals, et cetera. Let me throw that to Jerry and let him clarify what the difference is in those.
Okay, thank you for that. Again, folks, if you just tuned in, we are live. And we are talking with folks from the department hearing about the Cobell settlement. If you'd like to join us, 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Jerry, go ahead. Thank you. Welcome back. We have Jerry Gidner on the line with us, acting special trustee for American Indians. Go ahead, Jerry.
Yes, thank you very much. So there are two different numbers because there are two different lists, and let me explain that a little bit. Most of the money from the settlement has been and is being distributed by the Garden City Group, which is a claims administrator. Some of that money came to the Office of the Special Trustee, and if a class member who was deserving of a settlement had an open individual Indian monies account with OST, but we did not know where that person was for whatever reason, those monies came from the Garden City Group to the Office of the Special Trustee into the IAM account of those individuals, and we have been holding those funds. About $54 million with an M of the $1.4 billion with a B came to OST because of that. But the Garden City Group was the one who's administering the fund and sending out the money. So if they had a class member on the list and that class member did not have an open account with OST, Garden City Group kept those funds and kept that list. Or if they sent a check to somebody and it came back, then that person would be on the Garden City Group list. So we have a list of whereabouts unknown for people who had open IAM accounts, and Garden City Group has a list for people who did not have an IAM account. And I apologize. I understand that can be confusing. People need to check both lists. And so Garden City Group has people on their list. They're looking for addresses for about 35,000 people. And OST is looking, we have a larger whereabouts unknown list, but the subset that have Cobell settlement money are closer to the 14,000 that the Mr. Tasuda mentioned. So people looking to see if they have money waiting for them need to look at both websites or call either us or Garden City Group and see which list they might be on.
And so, Jerry, are you saying that the true number then is 49,000, or is that 14 a part of the 35?
No, it'd be closer to the 49,000. We do cross-reference the list. People move, and We do work very closely with Garden City Group, but their list and our list are separate, and there may be some redundancy, but they're largely separate lists. And I would say right now there's about $52 million between the Office of the Special Trustee and the Garden City Group that are associated with the names that we do not know where the people are. The Office of the Special Trustee has roughly $21 million. Garden City Group, roughly $31 million. So out of the $1.4 billion, this is the tail end, and it's this $52 million that we are looking for the individuals to whom it belongs, because we would very much like to get it to you.
All right. Hang tight, Jerry. I know John has to get going here. And John, before we let you go, just any other thoughts about priorities regarding the Cobell settlement with the current administration? Is there anything you can report for us?
Sure. And first, I don't know whether, because we had the technical difficulty at the beginning, but I did want to, before I left, say thank you, Tara, and Native America Calling for hosting us so we can raise awareness about this milestone in the settlement. And you're helping us to get word out from your platform, as well as the digital media platforms that we use. It's been really very important in getting awareness of this date and aid in our effort to find the missing account holders. So, and I want to stress, if folks, our listeners, have a moment to visit the Interior Department's Whereabouts Unknown database, and it's at, they can find it at doi.gov/OST/WAU for Whereabouts Unknown. In search for your loved ones, if you find a name, encourage that person or encourage that person's heirs to call 1-800-961-6109 so they can file a claim before the November 27th deadline. So before I just wanted to make sure I got that to you, Tara, and to your listeners. And again, thank you for hosting us.
And John, before you go,
briefly,
Yeah, I definitely want to hear your thoughts on the administration's priorities with the Cobell settlement before you go. Thanks.
Certainly. Let me ask you for some clarification. You're asking what our priorities are with the individual payments, or are you talking about the land consolidation fund? There are a couple of pieces to the settlement that are different.
Indeed, and there are plenty of layers, and I think we're going to hear and we're seeing there's priority to make sure that people are connecting with this, but you know, Cobell has a lot of other arteries with it, and definitely there's a lot to be considering. But yes, definitely, I mean, is this a priority, making sure that all the arteries are being seen to?
Definitely a priority. We're hoping to, I think, be able to finish out the responsibilities that were given to us through the settlement and through the Settlement Act. Part of this is with the Whereabouts Unknown and trying to get the word out and get as much of the money to people you know, that we can find, and with assistance of family and community members, that would certainly, we certainly appreciate that help. There is the component, which is the land consolidation fund. We're also working hard on that. That we're coming towards the tail end of that as well, and that fund will be exhausted before, you know, probably within a couple of more years. And so we are trying to work hard and prioritize the intent of the Settlement Act, which was to consolidate you know, fractionated interest, and we're working hard to try to make sure that the last monies in the account go towards consolidating those interests for Indian Country, and so that both the tribes and individuals have a better result with their individual interests, or with the tribal interests, better for tribal communities and for individuals as well.
John, we do appreciate you spending some time with us here this morning talking about all of this, and we do look forward to visiting with you again here on our airwaves as we take a look at more work that's being done this year. Thank you for joining us, John Tasuda.
Thank you, Terry. It's been my pleasure.
And folks, you can join us too. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And Jerry, when we think about the different folks whose ears perked up when we started talking a little bit about this and understanding more as to why this list exists and, you know, the priority of wanting to get in contact with folks. Jerry, let's start kind of at the beginning. If somebody's ears perked up and they are wondering, okay, does this mean me? How do I find out? What's the first step that you'd like to tell people?
Thank you. The first step is to call the Office of Special Trustee Trust Beneficiary Call Center, which is right there in Albuquerque. The phone number is 1-888-678-6836. And our folks there who answer the phone will walk you through some questions to determine if we should be looking for you on the Office of the Special Trustee list or the Garden City Group list. If they find an account for you, they will ask you the questions, work with you to verify that you are who you say you are, and or just be like any other financial institution where you're calling to verify an account. If they have to refer you to the Garden City Group, they will give you that information. So that is the number one step. And the call volume there has, we've had about 1,300 calls since the beginning of October about this issue, almost 200 just yesterday. So call the call center, 888-678-6836. The Office of the Special Trustee also has nearly 50 fiduciary trust officers. They're out on, their offices are on many of the reservations around the country. If there's one near you, you can drop by, visit our staff there. You can find the list of those on our website, which is the www.doi.gov/OST website. And they would be happy to assist you if you walk into their office or give them a call as well.
And I've also heard the website Indian Trust also being tossed out. Is that a place to go, or is it best to go to the DOI site?
Well, that is a place to go. That is the Garden City Group website. So it's www.indiantrust.com. There's a link there for their whereabouts unknown list. So you can go on, if you go to that website, you can click through to their search engine and search for names there. So either one or both, because you might be on one of the other lists and you need to check both of them.
Okay, Jerry, hang tight. We're going to take a break here, folks. But our phone lines are going to stay open. Maybe you have some questions or you've been meaning to do this, but you wanted to find something out first. You can give us a ring. 1-800-996-2848 is our number. What do you think the definition of a rural town is? Is it a town with one stoplight or with one zip code? There are actually a couple of definitions of what a rural town is. And they could determine a lot in Native America when it comes to funding for programs or simply how Native citizens live and feel. We'll get into this on the next Native America Calling.
paka damak mang yut aknicht lachtut ayagyat anga yu kamang insurance saga ni widayuk ngaut ashagung nat kamag na nyuinak akavin lag nag chipsuko kaso ismag nag pikamag nag imigilutang ilaut sakh kak iking kawkwivik 15 ak nat kanun kaya gawkluku 1-800-318-2596 kaso baksuku go.cms.gov/nativehealth una kingunang kaktok centers for Medicare and Medicaid services.
Yate, the Albuquerque Hispano Chamber of Commerce Convention and Tourism Department welcomes the Navajo Nation Department of Self-Reliance's Turning the Curve General Staff Meeting, November 14th through the 17th. Information on this event and services at siabq.org.
Support by Drumbeat Indian Arts, offering authentic Native American recordings and religious herbs, craft supplies, books, and a wide selection of Pendleton blankets. Holiday delivery on orders placed at drumbeatindianarts.com by December 15th.
Welcome back. You're listening to Native America Calling. I'm Tara Gatewood from Isleta Pueblo, and we appreciate you joining us today. Before we get to our conversation about the Cobell Settlement Funds, here are some details on a show we're planning for November 28th. We'd like to hear your Standing Rock story. Did you visit the camps during last year's demonstrations against the Dakota Access Pipeline? And how did the experience affect you? Did it change your life? Call us on our toll-free line at 1-800-996-2848 between 3 to 11 p.m. Eastern Time before November 27th and record your experience. We may use it for our show, which is scheduled for the last Tuesday in November. You can also send us voice memos, too. And today we are talking about the Cobell Settlement. November 27th is the final deadline for the individual Indian money, or IIM account holders, to apply for settlement money. You can see if your name or family member's name is on the list. We have links to that on our website, and you can also join us today and ask your questions if there's something unclear, or maybe you're helping a family member and you're not quite sure what you need to do. You can call in. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And if you've got something you'd like to share about this topic, give us a call. 1-800-996-2848 is the number. And we do appreciate John Tasuda, Acting Assistant Secretary for Indian Affairs, for joining us for the first half. Comes to us from the Kiowa Nation. Here with us is Jerry Gidner, and he is the Acting Special Trustee for American Indians, and he is a member of the Sault Ste. Marie Tribe, and it is our pleasure to welcome him back in. And Jerry, just real simply, because a lot of times the case is when there's a lot of paperwork or a holdup, we have elders, and people are trying to assist them, especially if it means getting on the computer. And so, Jerry, one question that I do have, if somebody is looking at this and they find a relative, maybe a grandfather and a descendant is looking at this, what happens then?
Well, if you're talking about somebody who is still with us, it would be the process we talked about before the break. Call our call center. 1-888-678-6836, and we can walk you through the process. If you're talking about somebody who has walked on, but they were a class member, the money should be in our estate account, and when that goes through probate, the money would be distributed to the heirs. If there's somebody on the whereabouts unknown list and they have walked on, just make sure that you let us know about that so we have the notice about that, because then those monies will move from a whereabouts unknown account into an estate account, and they will not be transferred to the Cobell Scholarship Fund. And again, the best place to start for any documentation, any of these questions, is our call center. They can walk you through all the steps and any particularities of your case that you might have.
And Jerry, when was this whereabouts unknown list published?
When was it published? We've had a whereabouts unknown list for years, as far as I know. There's always people who have moved and haven't given us a change of address, or for some reason we've sent them a check and it comes back, so we don't know where they are anymore. So of course it's just since the Cobell settlement that some of those accounts have had Cobell settlement money in them, and that's the money that we're talking about today. So the whereabouts unknown who have Cobell settlement money are a subset of our larger whereabouts unknown list. Now, if you're on that list, we'd like to find you, regardless of whether you have Cobell money or just incoming revenue or an old judgment fund payment. We still want to find you, so get in touch if you're listening. But the deadline to file for the Cobell settlement money is November 27th. We need to hear from you by then. If you want to be guaranteed to have your payment rather than having it go to the Cobell Educational Scholarship Fund.
And Jerry, with that November 27th date, is there is it business hours? Because sometimes people take it to the wire.
Well, it would be the end of that day. I don't know if that means midnight or close of business. You just have to, I don't know. I'm sorry, I don't know. Probably close of business that day. But we want to get you your money. So it's a court-appointed deadline. So we can't change the deadline, but we want to get you your money. So if you find yourself on a list, let us know before then, I guess is the answer.
Okay. Thank you for that, Jerry. The phone calls are coming in. Again, if you want to join us, 1-800-99-NATIVE. We're going to say hello to Terry in Mobridge, South Dakota, tuned in on KLND. Terry, thank you for giving us a ring. And what are you wondering today?
Well, today I have a question. I believe this is a payment that where a person wants me to find out if he said he opted out. I believe this is the Cobell settlement. He opted out the last part, the second part, where to give out a minimum of $800. He opted out, but then he wants me to find out if he can re-opt in.
Okay.
I mean, if that's possible. If not, I'll let him know. But if there is, I'd like to get a phone number for him to call so he can sign up for it before the date of November 27th.
Okay. Terry, hang tight. We're going to toss that to Jerry. And folks, also just want to let you know, you're more than welcome to call in, ask questions, but I also do advise don't give out your IIM account on air. Okay, Jerry, please help our caller, Terry.
Yeah, hi, Terry. Thank you. So I have to admit, I don't know the answer to your question. So I'm going to ask you to call our trust beneficiary call center, which is 1-888-678-6836, and they would be able to help you figure out if he can opt back in after opting out. And I apologize for just not knowing the answer to that question.
All right, Terry, thank you for your call there in Mobridge, South Dakota. We're going to go now to Alaska to say hello to Roy in Akiak, listening on KYUK. Roy, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Yeah, good morning. A great subject. It's something that I believe people that missed out on this need to really look into it. Even in Alaska, Cobell may be downstate. But listening audience, please really check into it. If you haven't received any Cobell settlement, get into checking it out, because that money would be very useful for the people, especially for us unemployed and experiencing great economic inequality at this time. But my question to you people that are programmed on this, can National Congress, what you call that, a Native American calling, make get the list on their website?
You know what, Roy? We have a link on our website and some of those places where you can navigate. But Jerry, you know, our caller Roy is seeing the importance of getting the word out and helping folks. And I know there are a lot of questions that probably come along with this. Jerry, is there a set of questions that, you know, that are going to be coming in that you can help answer now? Is there any information like that you'd like to share?
Well, I would say people should know the OST website, which is www.doi.gov/OST/WAU. I think there may be a link to that on the Native America Calling website, or you can link to it. I also want people to know that we want to get the money to these individuals, but if for some reason those individuals do not, you know, we can't find them, they don't identify themselves to us. These funds don't leave Indian country. They will be going to the Educational Scholarship Fund to be paying for college for Native American students. So it's important for us to get them to you if it's your money. But it isn't going, that we can't get to the individuals, we'll be helping Indian country educating its future leaders. So I just want people to remember that as well.
All right. Thank you for that. And again, folks, you want to join us, 1-800-996-2848. Is the number. And Jerry, what kind of efforts have been done to try and, reach folks? Have you been working with tribes, working closely with census offices and the different tribal nations? What kind of efforts?
Yeah, so we cross-check our list weekly against the United States Postal Service change of address list. We do, when we can, look at social media to try to find people. Our fiduciary trust officers that I mentioned earlier in the hour, almost 50 of those offices across the country, are out at powwows, gatherings, tribal meetings. I was just at the National Congress of American Indians meeting in Milwaukee a few weeks ago. Office of the Special Trustee had a booth there. We had our list there. We found a few people from that list at that meeting. So we are constantly looking for people on our whereabouts unknown list. And this deadline for the Cobell case makes it more urgent. So we'll publish lists in tribal newspapers. I feel like we're out there talking about this and beating the bushes a lot.
All right. Thank you for that. Jerry, we have another call. We're going to go to Larry in Pine Ridge, South Dakota, tuned in on KILI. Larry, thank you for your call. You're on air.
The original settlement was $11.7 billion, and I'm one of those individuals who opt out. And the reason I opt out was because of the stipulation that once you accept this monetary settlement, then you no longer have a land claim against the federal government from today backwards. And so my question is, for those of us who opt out, where is the stipulations regarding our rights to this money? Because only $3.4 billion was paid out, and that means there's $8.3 billion that's missing. And why in the world would Congress give $2.9 billion out of the $3.4 billion right back to the Department of the Interior, who the settlement was against?
All right, Larry, thank you for your call. And Jerry, I know there's some context that needs to go around this question, but anything directly you have for Larry?
Well, thank you, Larry, for calling. I would say I'm not sure where the $11 billion number is coming from. That could have been what the plaintiffs were asking for. But the ultimate settlement was for $3.4 billion. So all we can do is work to administrate those funds that the court approved and that the Congress then in a statute appropriated to this settlement. So I can't really address what claim you may still have from having opted out. All I can really talk about is this settlement that we're helping to implement.
Okay. Larry, thank you for your call. Jerry, thanks for being on the line. Let's take another call. We have Melissa in Albuquerque, New Mexico, tuned in on KUNM. Melissa, thank you for your call. You're on air.
Yes, hi. Thank you. Thank you so much for getting the word out about this. I was just wondering, have there been any reports of any scams related to this? And if so, what kind of warnings would you give people? It just seems like the opportunity would be there for someone to, you know, call people up and say, oh, hey, you won this, you know, you got a settlement, you know, just give us your Social Security number or something like that. Do you know of any scams? And if so, what can you warn people about?
Great question, Melissa. Jerry, any words for Melissa?
Oh, that is a great question, Melissa. Thank you. I have not heard of any, but I will tell you, our call center will never call you. If you want to contact us about this, you'll need to call the call center, and let me be opportunistic and take the opportunity to give the number again, which is 888-678-6836. So if somebody calls you asking for your Social Security number, don't accept that as true. Call the call center. The hours of the call center are 7 a.m. to 6 p.m. Mountain Time, Monday and Friday, and Saturday 8 to 12 Mountain Time. So nobody from the Office of Special Trustee would be calling any beneficiary about this.
All right. Thank you for that. And Jerry, we're going to bring in another voice here who's going to talk a little bit about the education side of this. But Jerry, that deadline is November 27th. Is, you know, that is a solid time. It's not going to be renewed, or any words to that?
That was a date agreed to by the Department of Justice on behalf of the federal government and the Plaintiffs' Counsel and agreed to by the judge in the case. So that is a date that we are working off of. So
okay. And after that, the funds will be transferred to the Cobell Scholarship. That's correct. Right, Jerry?
Yes, and that won't be an immediate thing. Garden City Group will still be processing information. The last payments out to individuals should be made by March, and it will not be until after March that there will be a transfer to the scholarship fund. But the deadline for filing the claim is November 27th.
And is that the same for the Garden City Group, or do they have a different deadline?
No, that's the same deadline. That's the deadline for the settlement. So that's for everybody.
All right. Thank you for that. And we're going to now welcome in Melvin Monet Barajas, and he is the president and executive director of the Indigenous Education Incorporated, which is the home of the Cobell Scholarship. And Melvin is Turtle Mountain Chippewa. It's our pleasure to have him with us on the line today. Melvin, welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I understand you have a few questions for me, and rather than jumping into numbers and data, I'll let you go ahead.
Okay. And Melvin, we just heard from Jerry Gidner, acting special trustee for American Indians, and he gave us a rundown of deadlines and also great places to connect. We just shared that the funds that are unclaimed after the deadline passes and things go through will go straight into the scholarship fund. And maybe some people are wondering, what is that and who does it serve? We'd like you to help us understand more. Go ahead, Melvin.
So the scholarship fund is a permanent endowment, if you will. It's a permanent investment. So with the money that is being put in, it is being invested, and we are spending the money each year on scholarships for American Indian Alaska Native students who are attending college at any level, vocational, undergraduate, or graduate level. The settlement does state that whatever funds are available for scholarships each year, which we determine annually, so there's not a dollar amount per year, we determine that later in the year, that 80% of that money needs to go to undergraduate students and vocational students, and 20% of that money needs to go to graduate-level students. So that's the largest stipulation in terms of folks understanding how that money is distributed to graduate and undergraduate students. So obviously the graduate pool is a little bit smaller and a little bit more competitive than the undergraduate level. It is a competitive scholarship. We do look at unmet need, which is different than Pell eligible. So a student might not get a Pell grant because of family expected family contribution. However, they may still have an unmet need, so that would qualify them for a scholarship if everything else were to look good and this, all of the other student responses were what they need to be. So it's an unmet need scholarship that we look at merit. We look at merit to see how a student's standing in college and high school, what type of institution they're attending. They need to be attending a public, private, or public or private institution, and it needs to be nonprofit. It cannot be a school that is proprietary or for-profit. We have put on our website a list of colleges and universities that are eligible right in the application. And so if the institution is not listed, it may be that they're a for-profit institution and the student doesn't know. They can always contact us and let us know. But we do fund students to attend accredited institutions anywhere in the world. We do have a couple of students who do some study abroad. I'm trying to think of what else you need to know in terms of who is eligible. Students do not need to be a Cobell Settlement recipient or descendant. We do ask that for the sake of research, and so we can follow up and know, you know, who is applying and, you know, how are folks even understanding their role as a Cobell Settlement recipient, but we don't use it for a determination of selection. Last year we had several thousand applicants. But with a limited amount of funds each year, as I said, we try to keep the money invested to earn interest. So with the amount of funds available, we were able to fund about 750 students at the moment. That number is going up each day. And that's at both grad and undergrad levels.
And Melvin, what's your understanding of how this even became a part of the process? Is this something that the folks who were working on this settlement understood that, you know, maybe this should go to future generations? Do you know any of the backstory as to how this even got in there?
Very minimal. I know that it was very important to Eloise to have some perpetual reminder of the settlement. Once the settlement closes, as you just heard earlier from the earlier guest, that once this last claim is up, sometime in March, folks are going to begin forgetting that it happened, that it went on. There's going to be, you know, a little bit of information here and there. But the scholarship is really going to be the perpetual reminder of that settlement and of the work that Eloise herself did. So we want to make sure that that stayed as a part of permanent history. But also, Eloise is really interested in making sure that Native students had access to higher education, especially those students who were really active in their communities, students who were current leaders or potential leaders in their communities, whether that community is an urban Indian setting, a rural setting, or a reservation-based setting. She wanted to make sure that those students had opportunities perpetually. And so that's really where the scholarship comes in, is making sure that that student who may have a gap in their financial need, that that's being filled in Indian country. And so it's not going to be enough money for everybody, and there's not enough money to fund the full need out there in Indian country, but we are specifically looking at and looking for those high academic achievers who are very involved in their community, want to be involved in their community, or need to go to school to learn how to be involved in their community and contribute to the economies of their community, which leads to the vocational piece of the funding. We want to make sure, and we're continuously looking for vocational level students, because they're going to contribute to the economies of our communities as much as a doctoral level student. You know, we need those people who just need to be mechanics, who just need to be welders, who just need to be teacher's aides, for whatever reasons that they go and they get this diplomas and certificates. We need those people as much as we need PhDs. And so, again, Eloise was really deliberate in making sure that the vocational students were considered as much as a doctoral or an undergrad student.
All right. Thank you for that. And Melvin, contacts you'd like to share.
Email that to our students. We have a chat function, or email that to my staff. We have a chat function on the website. If you click on it, a staff member will respond to you during business hours. Our phone numbers are all over the website. Go ahead and look for those at cobellscholar.org.
Okay. Thank you for that, Melvin Monet Barajas. We do appreciate you sharing information on this. And folks, also want to let you know that you can find an archived copy of today's broadcast on our website, nativeamericacalling.com. You can also sign up for our podcast on iTunes, and then it'll be right there for you when you're ready for it. We are also on SoundCloud and Stitcher, and you can also reach out to us if there's more comments that you'd like to make. You can go directly to our website, nativeamericacalling.com, and you can also send us a tweet at 1-800-99-NATIVE. That's going to do it for our program today. Thanks again to all the folks we heard from in the hour, Melvin Monet Barajas, John Tasuda, and Gerald Gidner. We are back again tomorrow with a show about living in urban or rural environments. How do they differ? How are they the same? Join the conversation, or start it, right now on Facebook. Our executive producer is Art Hughes. Senior producer is Monica Brain. Associate producer is Andy Murphy. And Marino Spencer is our engineer. Sol Travesso is our intern. Antonia Gonzalez is the anchor and producer of National Native News. I'm your host and producer, Tara Gatewood. Thanks again. We look forward to adding you to our discussion tomorrow and the rest of the week.
Support for this program provided by AARP. At AARP, we create and connect you to unique tools and programs to help you save money and tackle the issues that matter most to you, your family, and your community. What we do might surprise you. For more information and resources, including member benefits and discounts, AARP advocacy, and more, go to aarp.org. Support provided by Freedom Lodge. Is historical trauma a concern in your community? If so, you can join our Historical Trauma Masterclass at Ghost Ranch in New Mexico beginning February 2018. Tribal training for healthcare professionals, providing culturally relevant, dynamic recovery tools. There is no fee for tribal members' tuition. Registration deadline is December 1. Complete information, including paper or online registration, at freedomlodge.org/education.
Native America Calling is produced in the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation, a Native nonprofit media organization. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service. Music is by Brent Michael Davids. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.